Elise, Elise, Elise. What is it I find so hard about finding sympathy for that girl? I know she is adopted and probably from a troubled childhood, but she is also an adult, a young woman. But how can she not take responsibility for her own health and for her mother's? My dear Anna, she worries so much about her, so much wasted energy. She should just get her things together and focus on something. That's what she needs, a focus. Enough talk about these dreams and her strange state of mind. Well, I personally think it's better, perhaps, that she finds herself in one of these places, like Konradsberg at Kungsholmen. She gets proper treatment. But if it's true what Anna says, that she was getting better and now has been taken away. Oh, Anna, you care so much about your daughter, about your work. Oh, what marvelous progress you've made. Those incredible finds. When do I get to see them? I suppose I'll find no rest until I make sure that Elise is at least safe. If we can only find this Dr. George Fiedbeck, then he will know if what Dr. Mill is doing is legitimate or not. I really hope it is, so we can put this all to rest. This is Red Moon Roleplaying.
This is interesting. It says that the patient, before hanging himself, repeatedly was trying to throw himself into the water down in the harbor. Some sort of obsession with the water. The same day, trying to throw himself in there. Isn't that it doesn't mean anything. Is coincidence with the parents, are they?
Well, that certainly is coincidental, but I wonder, maybe we could have a word with this other doctor. Maybe if we can find evidence of malpractice, we'll be able to use that as leverage and a good little discussion with Dr. Mild. Well, I suppose we can pull his arm a little and convince him that maybe letting the mother know where her daughter is isn't the greatest loss.
You see me give a clear shiver, as if I'm realizing something.
What?
No, it's just... Didn't she... On the night of the exhibition, Anna told me that Liesl was having nightmares about water. Or was that just now? She said Liesl was having nightmares about water.
Well, I mean, that's not uncommon. The sea can be a terrifying place, don't you know? Thinking about all those ocean depths. Even I found what was it I read? Are you familiar with Jules Verne? Quite an exciting story, 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea, but if you really think about it, who knows what could be under there?
Listen here, Mr. Crane, you shouldn't make light of this. The stories in Jules Verne, this is serious. Both these parents drowning themselves, possibly, and then this person trying to throw himself into the water, now Liesl is having nightmares of water. You think there's a coincidence all surrounding this Dr. Mild?
When you put it that way, it does sound a little bit penny dreadful, but I mean, what? It's not like the poor doctor had any choice in how his parents died.
I have heard terrible stories of what people do in some of these asylums, shock therapy, you see this drowning therapy, and that people are being held underwater in order to suppress memories. What if Dr. Mild is really up to something here?
Well, all the more reason to speak to this other doctor, then.
Yes. It was George Fiedbeck, did you say?
Yes, he had been in touch with my colleague. It seemed like he was going to give my colleague the goods, so to speak, and really cause a stink around the hospital, really get them. But then he backed down. Sometimes people do that, you know, afraid of losing their jobs and, well, everything.
Yes, yes. Well, hardly could hurt to have a little talk. Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
I say, do you think it's too late to call on this gentleman now? Do we have an address?
You could call the operator. I mean, these days you don't necessarily call a number like that. You call the operator and have them connect you.
Well, I guess I can do that then. I apologize, Finkel. I didn't mean to sound dismissive. It's all just a little bit hard to swallow is all.
No, of course not. I'm getting worked up. Surely it is over nothing. I shouldn't have snapped at you like that. It's just I just saw something, and it somehow sent a shiver down my spine, and a bit into my leg too, for that matter.
Well, I'll make it up to you. I'll do the call, and let's go speak this doctor, see what we can find, and who knows, if we do find a bit of malpractice, well, maybe that can be what we need to do to get this doctor to be willing to be more diplomatic.
Sounds good. Oh, there's a phone over there, I suppose. You just get on the press phone.
It is not that late. It is about 9:30 or so now. And he picks up.
Widbeck.
Good evening, Dr. Widbeck. My name is Fingal Jung. I am calling with regards to a patient, a closely related patient at Konradsberg who has suddenly suffered a strange removal from the facility on the order of one Dr. Mild, and an acquaintance of mine told me that you might be someone who would know more. We are just a bit worried that things are being taken out of the what's supposed to have out of procedure.
Yes, I gathered that something was happening again. There was a woman yelling about Mild in the reception earlier today, causing a bit of a scene. I assume this would be the case you're referring to.
Yes, I'm afraid that was her mother, with whom I have close relations at this point.
You know what? I was actually about to head out for a late-night snack. Why don't we meet? I have some things I can tell you. I don't want to do it over the phone. How about a restaurant Sturehof by Stureplan?
Sturehof sounds perfect. Sit down, talk casually over a bit of food.
Excellent. See you there. I'll be heading there right now. I'll be waiting for you.
I hang up the phone. Well, Mr. Crane, it seems that we are going for a late night snack.
Well, I can't say that's an issue. After all, I didn't get to finish your fish. So maybe the evening is not totally wasted.
Yeah, it's a shame about the fish. But I'll make it up to you another time.
Of course. Very well then, let's go and meet the esteemed doctor.
Sturehof by Stureplan is one of Stockholm's better restaurants. And here in early August is crayfish parties that are arranged every night. And it's rather noisy in the room as you get there. Ask the maitre d' for Widbeck, and he moves up to a table some distance into the restaurant, and then a man, who you presume must be Dr. Widbeck, waves to you. What do you do?
I go over, sit myself down, and say in Swedish, "Pleasure to meet you, George Crane, associate of Fingal Young here."
Thank you for seeing us at this short notice.
Oh, I have a special interest in the person you're looking into. He's elegantly dressed in a dark suit, and he greets you warmly at first. He looks very young, with black hair and a small chin beard. He leans forward kind of conspiratorially as you begin talking about his colleague.
And myself, I'm a bit pleased to see that there is such a big interest. I was worried myself that he was going to hold back after having been silenced one time already.
I hope you get him. But before then, let's eat. What will you have?
Well, what do you recommend?
Well, the crayfish is good.
Have you taken part in proper crayfish Frossa, as we call it here in Sweden.
You know, I don't believe I have. What do I do?
It means you eat crayfish and you have certain drinks that are bringing out the flavors.
Well, then I'm all for some authentic Swedish cuisine. And as we're sort of finishing up, I say, why, thank you, Doctor. I have to say your recommendation was spot on. Spot on.
Now then, let's get to business. And he again leans in conspiratorially.
You see, I believe the main distress of that lady today was simply not knowing where her daughter has been moved to. Well, where has her daughter been moved to, Doctor? Surely that's not unusual for a next of kin to know the location of their loved one, even if they can't go and visit.
Normally, the family would be told where the patient has been taken. Not saying anything is clearly out of the ordinary. But well, if it is Dr. Mills, then I'm not necessarily surprised. I actually know another one of Mills' patients. He's a personal friend of mine. He was also cared for at Konradsberg because of family reasons.
So, wait, Doctor, are you telling me you don't actually know where the patient's been moved to? As if the patient has been moved out of the hospital, for example?
Yes, and we don't have any other official, clinics or anything else that this patient would have been moved to, at least not that I know of, but Mil, he seems to be able to arrange things.
Man. With connections.
Yes, and as I said, my friend was also cared for by Emil, and he was, as I understand it, also taken somewhere else.
Do forgive me, but I'm not familiar with Swedish law, but I mean, is that sort of thing legal? That you can just take patients to your own private residences or something like that?
If they've agreed to it, then you can, but I see that you are legitimately interested in taking down Mr. Mild. Would you perhaps want to hear his story? I just need your assurances that you won't reveal some certain sensitive and private matters about my friend.
We are only interested in the fate of Elise at this point.
I understand. Well, I can't really speak for him. I think it would be best if he told you his story himself. He's just next doors, really. We could go see him, and he can tell you exactly what happened.
Of course.
You're taken to an apartment on Adolf Fredrik Square. It's a small apartment, really, with a small bedroom with windows facing the courtyard, and a slightly larger living room that has windows facing the street. The home is clean, but it can't hide the age, wear, and tear of the building. The apartment is now dark, except for an oil lamp in the ceiling. And there is a man that Dr. Wiedbeck introduces you to. Viktor Sjödin. It's a man in his mid-20s. He's got blonde hair and blue eyes. He's clean-shaven and neatly dressed. He's wearing a gray leather glove on his left hand. Wiedbeck moves up to him to whisper something in his ear, and Sjödin moves in close, and Wiedbeck then moves away. Sjödin points to a sofa and sits down in an armchair himself. Please.
Yes, thank you for inviting us into your home at this hour, I say as I go and sit down in the sofa.
Would you like some coffee and cookies?
Oh, no, thank you. I'm actually quite full now. I had a lovely crayfish dinner, but thank you for having us in your home.
On the other hand, I find myself always sleeping slightly better on a cup of coffee.
He goes off and he makes some coffee, and you too, and Dr. Wiedbeck, you're sitting in this man's living room, and you hear like a clock that's ticking somewhere, but other than that, it's completely silent in this apartment. You can hear the water boiling.
Has the rain stopped at this point?
Yes, mostly stopped. There's a little bit of a drizzle still, but not the heavy rain that it was before.
Well, again, I look at the clock, fighting that I am feeling a little tired, although admittedly this is all becoming rather intriguing, although I'm still not entirely sure why I'm here, but I did promise to help, so I suppose I'm doing my best to help.
And you get the coffee, Tridin then sits down again. George tells me that you wanted to know something about that damn Dr. Mild.
That damn Dr. Mild, yes indeed. We happen to be, or at me, I happen to be closely related to a friend whose daughter, who I'm fumbling over the words here at this point, whose daughter has been taken under his care just recently. She was doing better, but now she's been taken somewhere, and we understand from what, well, what Dr. Wiedbeck says, that you were treated similarly. You were taken somewhere.
Yes, well, I can certainly tell you quite a lot about what happened between me and Dr. Mild. It was last year when I committed myself to Konradsberg. My parents considered me ill and in need of care. And committing myself and treating this as a disease was probably the easiest way to get my parents to leave me alone.
Well, what happened to you?
They gave me various pills and hot baths. I thought I could just stay for a couple of weeks, be declared healthy, and then I could leave. But during a visit to the hospital, my parents got in touch with Dr. Mild, who suggested an alternative treatment method, as he apparently understood what my real problem was. Can't for the life of me understand how they would have agreed to what Mild ultimately did to me, but perhaps he hadn't been clear on the specifics with them.
Well, pray tell, what did he do to you?
He told me that he would take me to another more convenient and pleasant clinic for further treatment. I didn't see a problem with that. Again, as I said, I just wanted to get declared healthy so my parents would stop hassling me about grandchildren and all that. Well, he took me to his house by Lake Mälaren, Villa Hogtun. Everything was peaceful for the first few days. I had my own room on the second floor, and I could sit in the garden and read. Really quite relaxing, actually. Admittedly, there was a nurse on site who always kept an eye on me, but she was discreet, and I almost felt like I was on vacation. Then I must have been drugged. Some kind of sleeping pill, I think. Perhaps with supper. I have foggy memories of an strange smell, a violent roar and splashing as of water hitting stone, and then a burning pain in my private parts. When I woke up, I had a fever and I felt horrible. I was back at Konradsberg in my room there. He had done something to me. The infection, it got worse and worse until I was rushed by ambulance to Sabasbaris Hospital, where I had to have surgery. The whole thing should have been a scandal, but it was hushed down. Konradsberg released me, and my parents distanced themselves from me, and well, I suppose in a way that's what I wanted, so here I am, and I considered reporting Mild in the hospital, but I didn't. Nothing good would come from scandal. I would just draw more of my attention to myself and my illness. I just want to move on with my life.
And did you find yourself treated in any way, or was it all for the worse?
Aside from what I had to be operated about, there was this, he says, and he holds up his hand and he pulls off the grey leather glove on his left hand, and he shows it to you, and you see that it is partly covered by scales and with webbing between the fingers. Small, sharp claws protrude where the nails should sit. The hand does not look completely human. It got like this a few weeks after the hospital stay. I was afraid it would spread further, but it didn't. And here we will have our first sanity roll.
I roll a 2.
Roll 39 under 55.
Then you do not take any sanity loss. But this is still rather unpleasant.
I gasp at the sight of this completely misshapen appendix. What on earth?
And Shadeen's expression changes as he seems to like again realize that this is how his hand looks like, and he begins breathing heavily. And Wiedbeck puts the glove back on again.
It looked like a fish, almost, but with claws.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it certainly is a unpleasant. So you're saying the doctor did that to you? He did some sort of experiment, procedure, and it gave you that reaction?
And he's still breathing heavily. Yeah, yes. I'm sorry, I don't know if I can go on.
Please, just one more question. Do you ever suffer from nightmares of the sea?
No nightmares.
I dip a cookie into the coffee and I chew it, trying to hold myself back, even though I feel I have questions at this point.
Wiedbeck also looks to you and says, yeah, maybe it's best that we give him some time. Huh? If you have any other questions, you can call me and we can set something up again.
Perhaps we could arrange for a dinner at my place at some point.
That would be very nice. That would be very nice indeed. I could use some good friends.
I stand up and after the pleasantries, go to take my coat and my umbrella to leave.
I stand up slowly as well. I'm still not entirely sure what to make of what I've seen. It certainly was bizarre. Slightly fascinating in a way, but bizarre. Not entirely sure where to go with this, though. As we leave the apartment, I mention to Young outside, well, how do you want to proceed? I mean, okay, I suppose, theoretically. We go to Dr. Mild now with this. We threaten to have this all brought up again. Well, it might make him change his tune, although at the same time, if he has pull with people, he might not be very happy about us dredging up the past.
Well, we do know where he lives now, where his place is, and that this is where he is taking people, to his private place. I wonder if his purposes here are actually quite nefarious. He said it was burnt, his private part, and now this deformed hand.
I don't know much about modern psychiatry, but to me it sounds like the man's mad, probably conducting legal experimentation. After all, if he's not allowed to do it in the actual hospital, it must be nefarious, no?
That's what it sounds like. Perhaps this is something that could also be brought to the press.
Maybe. I guess the question is, what do you want to do? It's your friend. I guess we're trying to get her daughter out of there, or at least transfer to a safer place.
We know where it is now. We could either bring the press there and give them a threat, or we could perhaps take a tour down and just talk to the doctor himself, try and make him see sense. I'm not sure what would be the best way to go about this.
Granted, he might be willing to let money talk.
And that's true. I don't think perhaps we shouldn't tell Anna too much at this point, other than that we are on the case and trying to make it better.
Indeed. No, maybe we should just arrange a meeting with him and try diplomacy first, see if maybe a financial contribution can convince him that your friend's daughter isn't needed for the treatments. And if he refuses, we can get a little nasty. It's all rather exciting in a way, I guess.
Yes, it is. I wonder also if there is more information to be found out about these previous patients, where they the one that committed suicide. I wonder if it's related somehow. You know, I cannot help but feel that there is something related between this and that strange little village on the west coast.
Well, that's a little far-fetched, isn't it? Why would they be connected? I mean, okay, Apparently you mentioned Elise was from there, but it's not like all the other patients are from this village.
I suppose that's true. And Dr. Mild himself, where was he from? It would be interesting to know. Maybe his parents. I'm fumbling in the dark. I'm sorry, it's a bit late. My fantasies are taking the best of me.
The one thing you do think as you are fumbling around there in the dark is that what was being done there at the clinic, it seems to have really affected Mr. Houdin in a rather horrible way. And what would happen if that happened to Elise? Do you have time to try to negotiate your way through this? They could try to do something to her already now. It could be happening as you're standing right here. How would Anna take that? Would she be able to forgive you?
It's in my hands now. I need to act. I turn to George. You know what, George? I'm not sure we actually have the time for this. If he is indeed doing these strange experiments, and we only have... I don't know. You heard Mr. Credine's story. He was taken in there, greeted as a guest, having dinner, felt like a vacation, and then the snap of a finger. Something about the water. The burns. Now his hand, it looked like a nightmare.
Well, I understand, but what are you suggesting? Go down there now, knock on the door, and walk in and take her out?
I almost think I am.
Well, I mean, not that there's not a certain level of gallantry to that, but I don't know how we would do that without, I don't know, getting arrested by the police for trespassing. Isn't that how it works normally? I don't know how it works in Sweden.
Not if we can get the police on our side first. I doubt he wants the police involved. There's enough hush as it is. I don't think he would do that, no.
You make a good point, actually, now I think about it. So you're suggesting we go to his house and just give it to him, I suppose. I suppose we could just blackmail him right there and then.
Yes. We tell him we know that what he's up to, that he'd better choose another victim for experimenting on, and we'll all leave this be.
I look a little uncertain, but then I nod, saying, well, I promised I'd help. All right, Mr. Young, I'll do it, I guess.
It's the right thing to do.
You have the location, Villa Hogtun, in Mälarhöjden. It's out in the countryside, close to Lake Mälaren. You have a car, do you?
I suppose I would at that. I suppose I would.
Yes. And you have taken your car there, and you have the address and everything, and you find Mild's villa. It's located at the end of a gravel road that has been named Hogtornstigen. It's about 1 kilometer north of the tram terminus that other people would take to get there. The house is surrounded by a 2-meter-high stone wall. There's a black iron gate. The house on the other side is a white wooden villa. There's a grey garage located next to the main building. And now it is midnight, and all the lights are out in the house, and everything is quiet.
I wonder, I say, as we stop the car a bit away, and we're walking up to the place, and we stand outside by the bushes. Maybe just have a small look before we knock on the door. I mean, it looks like they're asleep for now, but if there's anything suggesting anything else or any activity, there's no time to waste.
Well, dear me, I really haven't had enough wine for all this. All right, I kind of summon up another burst of energy, as it is quite late now, and I'd rather be in bed, but I am trying to help this man out, so I suppose I need to toughen up. So I will exit the car, and I guess just start looking around.
This side, it's the wall is a little bit smaller, actually, and it shouldn't be all that difficult to for example, climb over?
Is it very dark? Obviously, it's midnight. We don't have any lights with us.
No, it is. It's quite dark. There's some moonlight on the lake that's giving you just enough light to be able to see what is going on, but just a little bit.
I think perhaps you could get over here and go and have a look. I don't know if I could climb over this.
All right, old man, let me give it a go.
And you have no problem at all getting over the wall. There's some small broken points that you can put your feet into and then just kind of heave your way over.
I land on the other side, scuffing my shoes a little in what I imagine is a very muddy area and sort of frowning.
It's a garden. There's fruit trees and you've stepped into some salad.
I whisper loudly, "All right, I'm over."
Good. Just see if there is someone, if there's something going on. Or...
I actually do laugh a little at that, like, "Oh, all right, I'll just intrude on the secret meeting." Goodness me, all right, all right. I kind of try making my way around, seeing if I can find a way to let my friend in.
Well, why don't we roll a spot hidden to see what you actually see here when it comes to finding a way in.
Sadly, with a 59, I fail my spot hidden.
Would you be interested in perhaps pushing this roll?
Ooh, I would. Are there any consequences if I push?
Well, you are trying to do this quite quietly, so there's a risk that in your searching about, poking about, that you will perhaps make some noise.
I do push the roll. Sort of quite concerned suddenly about making noise, so I kind of just duck to a corner. I'm feeling quite excited now at the prospect of breaking and entering, even though I know I shouldn't. This time I roll a 9.
The kitchen window is open. There's no sound coming from anywhere, really. But you have a clear path into the house. And didn't he say that he was on the second floor? Yes, his room was on the second floor. Could that be where Elise is?
I think to myself, if I could enter the house, I could always just quickly go to the front door, unlock it, open it, and then I could be joined by my companion, yes?
Yes.
Wow, all right, well, I hesitate for a moment, again, being aware that this is a crime. At the same time, if this man is a nefarious madman, I suppose there's no harm in a bit of breaking and entering. Who knows, maybe this is actually a story where I'm the hero. So, all right then, I'll jump up and try and enter the house through the window.
What about Fingal? Are you going to leave him on the other side there, or...
I first follow the wall to see if it's even easier to get over further down. But if the wall just goes all the way down to the lake, I suppose I start making my way back to the front view of the house.
You do find another gate here now that you're following the wall for such a long time. And this gate, it doesn't look properly locked. It's like a small kind of like maintenance gate almost, leading into a greenhouse. You could perhaps just open that one and walk right through.
Oh, yes, yes. I'll try and carefully do that.
You do that. And you are now also on the other side of the wall inside of this garden.
I try and, using basic logic, make my way to the front door of the house, hopefully to unlock and open it as soon as Mr. Young is visually looking at said door.
And then there are these staircases. There's one that goes up and one that goes down, and you see that there's a key cabinet next to the main entrance that has a number of different keys, and one of them seems to be also for the main entrance.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm going to take that and very carefully try and open the front doors.
It is open.
I poke my head out and sort of hopefully see Fingal. And sort of just wave, like, "I've got the door open!"
As I come around in the darkness and I see the door open, I first freeze in my tracks, and then I see the face obscured slightly, but I hear the voice of George.
I see, yes, very, very crafty of you, I say, and I come up, walking like a grown-up does when he pretends to sneak.
Well, I suppose we're criminals now. Never mind. It's for a good cause, right? Let's go upstairs and see if maybe we can find the girl. I mean, if we just walk out with her now, then, well, at least we'll have her, I suppose.
We'll take her away from here.
Yes.
It is the right thing to do.
And you get back into the house, and you are walking up the stairs as quietly as you possibly can. You can hear snoring coming from somewhere upstairs. Otherwise, it's quiet. And every step on this wooden staircase, it sort of creaks a little bit, but you're able to move quietly enough that it's just a very, very small creak.
Right. Well, I try to think to myself where a guest bedroom would be, because surely that's where patients would be kept. So I look to the left, look to the right, I suppose. Big pair of double doors I see there in front of me. That can't be right. Let's try going towards the room on the map marked 9.
The door is not locked.
I slowly open it to poke my head in.
And there's a woman lying in the bed. It's Elise. She's wearing a white nightgown, and she is sleeping heavily, it seems.
I silently look to Young and kind of bring my hand to my mouth in a sort of like shush, and I enter the room. I am overcome with quite a few emotions. Number one, feeling very untoward about sneaking into a young lady's bedroom in the middle of the night and not wanting to startle her, but at the same time, noticing that she does seem rather drowsy. Is she under some sort of medication, I wonder? I start looking around the room very quickly. Does anything look unusual, or does it seem just like a normal guest bedroom?
This is a very, very normal guest bedroom. There's nothing of particular interest in here. There's some normal, like, novels, like, books on shelves. But that's about it, really. Nothing that stands out.
I move over towards the bed. I try and position myself sort of in front of where her face is, and keep a bit of distance so I'm not looming over her. And I attempt to just cough.
I carefully move in and close the door just closer to a bit.
And she opens her eyes and she sees your face first, Fingal.
Shush. It's going to be fine. He's not, the doctor is not a good person. We are going to take you out of here.
No, you're right. There's something happening in the basement. I'm not the only one trapped here. We need to save them.
Well, no, I think we need to focus on getting you out, Miss Elise. We can't be unleashing everyone in the building.
We have the card. We'll take you to the card, and then we can see about the basement.
No. No, we need to save them first, okay?
Please.
How many people are in the basement, Elise?
But it's very important. We need to save them.
You're going to have to be very, very quiet. Understand? I look a bit stern. I feel impatient, and as I always do with her for some reason. We'll see what's in the basement, but please be very quiet. Take something on if you need to, but let us try and do this quickly.
You can now roll for stealth, both of you.
I actually roll a 12 under 20.
Well, I roll 81 over 20.
It's going great. You make it down to the main entrance area where you have the stairs leading down into the basement. You notice that when you were looking at the key cabinet before, that there's a key marked basement as well there.
So wait, at least give us something. How many people are in the basement?
I'm not sure, but at least one.
How many staff are here as well? We've been very lucky so far, but other than the doctor, how many people does he have?
I think I've got like five, but I think I think there's only one or two here now, and they're sleeping.
And you, I suppose at some point you are trying to grab the key to be able to open up the basement. And when you do that, one of the other keys fall out of the key cabinet and falls on the floor and makes a clanking sound, basically, as it falls down.
I freeze up.
And it's dead silent. And you can't hear anything.
Okay. All right, at least what we'll do, we'll get the doors open, and then it's every man for himself, all right?
All right.
The car is outside. If we need to run, be ready to run for the car. All right, Elise, it's not worth not getting out of here.
Oh, all right. And she takes the lead. She's walking in her white nightgown there and walking down these stairs.
Wait, Elise, is there like a light or something? You can't just be walking down into a basement darkness.
She flips a light switch and there's a reddish light that lights up this staircase. It's quite steep, actually, and damp. It's a stone staircase that leads down into the dark. It's moist, and there's a strong odor of seaweed. And you hear the sound of water moving, like there's a pool down there.
Well, all right. All right, young, we'll go down there, and we'll open the doors for these people, and then we get the hell out of here. Goodness me.
I move slowly, hearing my friend swearing, even if in hushed tones, but it makes me nervous.
And you come down into this basement, which is quite large. Sturdy brick walls support the ceiling here. And in the middle of this room, there's a large steel tank, 5 meters across, with peepholes of what looks to be thick glass. The water in this tank is cloudy and opaque, but it moves faintly as if there's something in there. There is also surgical tables here. One of the metal tables has leather straps. There's some surgical instruments on a red cloth next to it. There are wooden shelves here with large glass jars of varying sizes, but you can't quite make out what's inside of them.
There's no one here. Look, Elise, there's just this.
And she's just walking towards the tank, not paying attention to what you're saying.
You look around, feeling uncomfortable, following.
And you're looking around, you see some of these jars. They're containing something that looks... It looks like animal remains? Or is it human organs, maybe? A head stares out through one of the jars. The face is almost completely human, but it has large fish-like eyes and what looks to be gills. A torso with the organs visible is in the largest jar, and the skin on this dissected creature is scaly and has a dorsal fin on its back. As you see this, I want you to roll for sanity.
I also probably have seen this looking over Young's shoulder.
And you're both seeing it. Roll for sanity.
I roll 34 under 55. Hmm.
I roll 31 under 40.
You both lose one sanity.
I sort of step back a little, not really understanding what I'm seeing. I mean, I once had a friend whose uncle used to keep rats and strange jars in their little basement laboratory they used to have for field studies or something. It's sort of similar to that, but golly, strange and unsettling, and I sort of just go towards Elise, and I don't want to lay a hand on her because it's improper, but I reach out like, Elise, doesn't seem to be anyone down here, so I'm afraid we need to get you out of here now.
The water swirls. Something big is moving inside the tank. A long, narrow body. It looks like a grotesque mix of a fish, a frog, and a human. A scaly tail sweeps past, and clawed hands are placed against the glass, and a distorted face with large dark eyes and a gaping jaw filled with sharp teeth is pressed against it. This being cannot exist, but it does. Roll again for sanity.
That time I roll 90 over 39.
And I roll 3 under 54.
George
lose 1d6 of sanity.
5.
Roll for intelligence.
I roll 78 over 65.
Then your mind protects you from the horror that you see before you. This isn't real. Surely it cannot be. No.
I look at this horrific abomination floating around like some sort of pet fish, only completely and utterly incomprehensible. I move forward, I roughly grab Elise by the hand, and I yank her up the stairs, running for the stairs, saying, "We need to go now!"
And you begin yanking at her arm, and she fights back, and she's strong. She's much stronger than a girl her age and build should be. And she continues moving towards the tank. You've made a lot of noise, though, and you think you can start to hear steps upstairs? Not quite sure. The face, it looks desperate. It wants to be freed, she says.
It's not a person, it's a thing! Elise, if you don't come up with us right now, none of us are getting out of here, goddammit!
Shh, you be quiet, for the goodness sake, both of you.
I say, I'm... Even if I'm not losing much sanity points here, I'm very taken aback, first by the sight of this half-human, half-being, whatever it is, in the container, and now this thing moving about. Oh, this is some sort of crocodile. I start moving back, and I hear someone moving in the stairs, and I go and try to hide.
And where you go to hide, you notice that there's sort of a kind of alcove behind the stairs, and here is a desk. It's an oak desk that has a typewriter and an electric lamp. There's also a bookshelf with about 30 books behind glass doors. Most of them look to be anatomy and biology. And then there's one very old and leather-bound volume that immediately draws your attention. It's called Unter Seekulten by Graf Gauberg.
Something German. As I go up and I kneel down next to this desk, I see that book, and I, for some reason, in the middle of all this, hearing this sounds of water from the tank and the arguing of Elise and George and the possible steps from someone upstairs, I feel I somehow need to take that book. I do so. I try and open the doors to get it.
You do. And next to the book are a number of folders.
Whatever he's doing here, it's not right. It must be exposed. Whatever he's doing, it must be exposed, I think to myself. I take them, and I get ready to run out of here.
Yes, and you see that there's pictures and notes there, but you don't have time to look at any of them. You grab the book, and Crane, you've been yelling to Elise to come. She's now at the tank, and she is touching a padlock that's on there. You have one action that you can take here. Either you can try to run, you can try to stop her. What do you want to do?
I suppose I will feel that I want to run, but I can't just leave everyone here. That's not who I am. Or is it? I don't know. This is all suddenly extremely unexpected. I guess I'll die for cover somewhere to try and hide, because I don't know if running up the stairs would be helpful anyway.
We have to free it. Whoever finds it, they're going to continue the kind of work the doctor was doing. It deserves to be free.
Elise, you're a grown woman now. People are coming down the stairs, probably about to do something horrible to you. You can either hide right now, or you can stay there and let them come for you. I can't help you anymore. And I just sort of dive to hide somewhere.
And the padlock snaps open as she unlocks it with a key that she must have found somewhere. And the lid to this tank slowly begins to open as you hear steps coming down the stairs. And you have both hidden, and you don't quite see what happens next. But you hear something big that's clumsily moving, the sound of water, like, sloshing. And then suddenly quick moves, screams. There's a gunshot and it's deafening. And the horrible sound of flesh being torn. And there's silence.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we played the Kingshaven Minotaur for Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition. This adventure was written by our friends Gunilla Jonsson and Mikael Pedersen for the Swedish edition of Call of Cthulhu that is published by the fantastic folks at Elusu Publishing. The music is from the Cthulhu, Nyarlathotep, Yog-Sothoth, Shub-Niggurath, and Asatoth compilations by our friends at Cryochamber. Check them out at cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel for more game music for your table. We've also used the official soundtrack for the Swedish version of Call of Cthulhu, composed by none other than our friend Andreas Lundström from Sweden Rolls. We would like to give massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoshobert, Nastasha Rollerson, Simon Cooper, David, Julia, and David Hogberg for their generous support. And we would of course also like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult of Minute Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. And remember, that is not dead which can eternal lie, and with strange eons, even death may die.